If you'll turn in your Bibles this evening to Song of Solomon, we will continue our series looking at that, and we will be looking this evening at chapters 1 and 2 and the first few verses of chapter 3. We're glad that you're here, and I appreciate Seth leading those songs that go along with this morning's lesson, and let's continue to think about the importance of talking with others about the gospel. I had not heard the song Bring Them in a very long time, so it was very encouraging to sing that together with you. Of course, we're going through the Song of Solomon on Sunday evenings, and this evening we're going to be looking at the period of dating and courtship. There are three things I want you to look for as we go through Song of Solomon. First of all, look for the particular stage of life that we are in. In chapters 1 and 2, in the first few verses of chapter 3, is typically how we identify that as courtship or dating. The rest of chapter 3, all of chapter 4, and the first verse of chapter 5 is the wedding ceremony, and then everything after that is a period in which they're married and they're living their married life. So as you go through, regardless of where you are in the book, learn those three stages and keep up with that as you go through the book. It's not all the same day. It's not all the same week. It's different stages of time. This evening, we are looking at what we call courtship and dating. The second thing I want you to look for as you go through the book is when you read a verse or a few verses that have the idea of love in it, rather than just reading the word love, ask yourself, what am I learning about love when I read this verse? And I'll try to give you some examples of that this evening. The theme of the book is not so much about the sexual relationship between a man and a woman. The broader theme and the bigger theme is that of love between a man and a woman in marriage and the different qualities of that love that need to be in our life. The third thing I'd like for you to look for as you go through the book of Song of Solomon is look for the other character qualities that come out in the book as well. There are other character qualities other than love that men and women need to have in their lives. For example, this evening we're going to be reading about a woman here who's a hard worker. She goes out and she works in her family's vineyards. Hard work is a good quality to look for in someone when you're dating and to marry someone. In chapter 1 and verse 3, we read that Solomon had a name, a reputation, a character. That's another quality. Does this person have a good reputation? So look for the qualities of love, of course, but look for other things that are there as well. So this evening, then, we're going to be looking at the first of these three basic sections of the book. Anticipation. This is the period of time in which this man and woman, Solomon and the Shulamite, are dating. So they're anticipating getting married one day. Lord willing, next Sunday night we'll look at the wedding, which is the consummation, and then thereafter affirming their love together after they are married. So this evening we're going to be looking at the dating and the courtship days. So I've described chapter 1, verse 2 through chapter 3, verse 5 as falling in love. Here's where a man and a woman, doesn't have to be confined to a young man and woman. Seth was just telling me before the lesson about his aunt is considering remarriage, and she's an older lady. So whether we're talking about teenagers in love or later on in life, different things come to us at different times in life. What do we need to be doing and thinking about with regard to courtship or dating? That's what we're going to be looking at this evening. What are the qualities that we need to be cultivating? Dating is a good opportunity to express love for each other. Notice in tonight's lesson how they talk to each other and they express love. Dating is a good opportunity to share respect and admiration. Notice how they are describing each other during this time. Very respectful and in a good way and in a positive way and an uplifting way. Dating is a good opportunity to gain knowledge of others as you go out and spend time together. One thing that we're going to notice when we get over into both in chapter 1 and in chapter 2, they're spending time together getting to know each other. And that is a very important phase with regard to dating. It's not just about, hey, do you want to go to a movie? Or, hey, do you want to go get something to eat? It's about spending time learning, is this the person I'm going to want to be with and love for the rest of my life? So we have to get deeper, in other words. And by the way, if we're not in this part of our life this evening, many of us are not, a couple of things. First of all, these things we can jot down as parents or as grandparents. We can help others with these kinds of things. And as we're going to notice this evening, the things that are going on here during the dating years, there's no rule that says you can't still have them in the married years. So the things that we are reading about this evening, we can still have in our lives today for those of us who are married. So let's look this evening then at this period of time. And of course, it's a good opportunity to develop a strong, loving bond. This is what is going to carry us through all the way through life. So, you know, when we're dating, we can go out and do fun things, but we also want to be speaking and doing things that develop a deep, strong bond that will last throughout our life. As I mentioned last Sunday evening, there are different speakers in this song. A lot of Bibles do a good job of identifying who these are. If you do not have a Bible that does that, you're welcome to my notes. Here is a typical way in which we are going to be identifying these speakers tonight, and I will try to mention them as we go along if you want to write them in the margin of your Bible. This evening, we're going to look at four areas of love in courtship. There's a longing, there's a period of expressing our love, there are activities that we engage in, and then there is a determination to stay in love. So these are the four areas of dating that we're going to be looking at this evening. Let's start with me, if you'll read with me, chapter 1 and verse 2. One of the things that I wanted to do in our series on Sunday nights is to actually read the book, since we don't spend a lot of time doing that, so we are going to read together. Now, I would love to comment on every verse. I just don't have time to do that. If you would like to talk more afterwards about a particular verse or a particular phrase, I would enjoy talking with you about that. Just understand, I cannot comment on everything as we go through this evening because of our time. But I will try to comment on a few things as we go through related to our topic. Start with me in Song of Solomon, chapter 1, and verse 2. This is the Shulamite speaking. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Thine oils have a goodly fragrance. Thy name, talking about a character or a reputation, is oil poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. Draw me. Now, starting with, we will run. This is likely the daughters of Jerusalem. They say, we will run after thee. And then the Shulamite begins to speak again in verse 4. The king has brought me into his chambers. Notice in tonight's lesson, in chapter 1 and chapter 2, Solomon and the Shulamite are doing things together, but there is no hint or suggestion of sexual activity. They'll be together in a room, or they'll be together at a table, or they'll be together out in the country. I want you to notice that there's no suggestion of any sexual immorality. The sexual relationship is going to come later on the wedding day, but there's none of that here. So you'll read about them being together, but it's not sexual activity. During the dating years, we need to be together. We need to spend time together, talk with each other, and talk about our plans and those kinds of things. But when you read in chapter 1 and 2 about them being together, it is not suggesting of anything sexual. So he brings her into the chamber, but it's simply to visit. So I wanted to mention that. While I'm thinking about it, God's plan, let me back up. The world always has it opposite of what God does, typically. The world says, get together sexually first, and then later get married. The Bible always says get married first before that sexual relationship happens. And so the reason I asked for 1 Thessalonians to be read this evening, if you look at that scripture reading again, Paul is talking about abstain from fornication, sexual activity outside of marriage. Stay away from that. Verse 3 opens with sanctification, and verse 7 closes with sanctification. We've got to be set apart, set away from that sin of fornication. But notice how the world always has an opposite of what God does. So get married first, then that sexual relationship, not the other way around. The rest of verse 4 is the daughters of Jerusalem. We will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will make mention of thy love more than wine. Then, the last part of verse 4, the Shulamite speaks. Rightly do they love thee. I am black. Your version might say dark. This is not talking about a nationality per se. It's talking about how that she's been outdoors in the sun a lot, and that's why she's dark. It's not talking about some ethnic background. But I am black, or I am dark, dark-skinned, but comely. O you daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar. Kedar is an Arabian desert tribe, and they made their tents out of black goat skins. And so those tents are black in color. As the curtains of Solomon. Look not upon me because I am swarthy or dark, your version might say. Because the sun has scorched me. My mother's sons were incensed against me. They made me keeper of the vineyards. But my own vineyard have I not kept. I did want to make a comment on this. This last statement is probably not talking about her own physical vineyard. She would have been keeping that with the rest of her family. This is an expression that is talking about, we would basically say this. I've spent all my time out working for others. I haven't taken care of myself. So that the last part of that verse is basically saying, I haven't taken, now some commentators will say something like, I haven't taken care of my looks. But I think it's broader than that. I haven't taken care of my own life, my aspirations, what I want, what I would like to have in life. I've been out doing all of this work. I haven't been able to take care of myself. And so she's going to begin to take care of herself as she begins to have this dating relationship with Solomon. Verse 7. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loves. So she's speaking of Solomon. Where do you feed your flock? Where thou makest it to rest at noon? For why should I be as one that is veiled beside the flocks of thy companions? And then Solomon begins to talk in verse 8. If you know not, O thou fairest among women, go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock and feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tent. In other words, if you search for me, you'll find me. I have compared thee, O my love, to a mare or a steed in Pharaoh's chariots. Now, if a man compared a woman to a horse, you know, he might get socked in the mouth, maybe. This is not talking about maybe so much a particular physical characteristic of a horse, but these steeds or mares are prized possessions in Pharaoh's chariots. And also they are decked out. Horses would have all kinds of ornaments on them, all kinds of body armor that glistened in the sun. And so we're talking about something that is prized and something that looks well. Thy cheeks are comely with plates or ornaments, thy neck with strings of jewels. In other words, she was wearing various pieces of jewelry and so forth. Verse 11 is the daughters of Jerusalem. We will make thee plates of gold with studs of silver. Then the Shulamite begins to talk again in verse 12. While the king sat at his table, my spikenard sent forth its fragrance. They're spending time together. There's no hint of any sexual intimacy or anything. Just like back in verse 4, the king brought me into his chamber. Here they're sitting at a table. Maybe they're eating. Maybe they're talking. There's nothing inappropriate going on here. This is the dating years. They're spending time together. My spikenard sent forth its fragrance. This was a costly perfume from a plant from India. It typically did not grow in Palestine. It had to come from India. And so it was a very costly perfume that she's putting on in order to sit with him. My beloved is unto me as a bundle of myrrh. This was also a costly perfume, but from the Arabian gum tree that lies between my breast. My beloved is unto me as a cluster of henna flowers. These were used to dye colors in the vineyards of En-Gedi. This is a well-watered oasis on the western shore of the Dead Sea. Then Solomon begins to talk again in verse 15. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thine eyes are as doves. And then the Shulamite responds to him. Behold, thou art fair, my beloved, yea, pleasant. Also our couch is green. The beams of our houses are cedars, and our rafters are firs. Let me make a comment on this, because somebody might be thinking, well, if they're dating, what are they doing in a house together? So I wanted to make a comment on that. I understand this to be a poetic description of being outdoors. And so our couch is green because of the way some of these words are used elsewhere in the Old Testament. I would say what's being described here is, it's like saying the grass below us is green and the trees above us, they are our beams and our rafters. This is likely a poetic description of being outdoors and spending time together outdoors with the grass under us and the trees over us. So what we're finding here is a longing of love in courtship. I want to be with this person. And we begin to see expressions of love. He's saying good things about her. She's saying good things about him. Come with me now to chapter 2, where we continue this idea of expressing compliments toward each other. Look at chapter 2, verse 1. I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. The plain of Sharon was a well-watered plain in northwestern, more northern and western Palestine. Beautiful place there where flowers grow and so forth. Notice in chapter 1 in verse 5 and 6, she is aware of her looks and she just admits, you know, I'm dark, I've been outside a lot. Notice in chapter 2 and verse 1, she says, I am a rose of Sharon. I want to mention something here tonight with regard to dating and courtship, and we're going to see it when we get over into the wedding day and then marriage. I want you to notice something about the Song of Solomon, and I've been impressed upon this more by looking at this again. There are several things going on in this book that mirror, listen, exactly what goes on today. We're not experiencing something completely different than their world. Men and women and their interaction today go through the same types of emotional and psychological and physical kinds of things today, just like they did then. And so I want you to read this book and notice that the same kinds of things are coming out in our own life. This happens all the time, even to this day, where a man and a woman get together and they begin to start a relationship. One or the other will be self-conscious. They think, well, you know, I don't really look good. And is he going to like my hair? And is he going to like this? And he's going to like that? And there's that uncertainty about that kind of thing. But notice in chapter 1, beginning in verse 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, they begin to compliment each other. They begin to show, I really am in love with you. I like you, and I like the way you look. And so that builds confidence in us, and we begin to speak even better about ourselves. So look at chapter 2, verse 1. That's a lot different than chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. And so compliments go a long way in bolstering a person's self-esteem and how they feel about themselves. That kind of thing still goes on to this very day. So there are the same kinds of emotions and those types of things in our relationships to this day. So in chapter 2, this expressing love and expressing admiration for each other continues on. So, she says, I am a rose of Sharon. Look at verse 2. Solomon, or the beloved, he speaks. As a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. I know that you're dark skinned. I know that you've been out working in the vineyards. But the way I view you is, you're a lily among thorns. Well, that's going to raise up her self-esteem, obviously. And so you begin to talk and you begin to encourage each other and build each other up. That's what the dating and the courtship years are about. The Shulamite speaks in verse 3. As the apple tree among the trees of wood, so she's now going to counter with a compliment. And that happens. You know, you go out, the man compliments the woman. Well, I liked it. And then she, well, I like it. And you kind of go back and forth. That's what's going on here. Just complimenting back and forth, expressing things back and forth. So now she says, you're like an apple tree. So is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. Then the Shulamite speaks in verse 4. Likely she's speaking to the daughters of Jerusalem. He brought me to the banqueting house. Again, no suggestion of any sexual contact, just spending time getting to know each other. And his banner over me was love. This is a great example of what I was talking about earlier. When you read a verse in Song of Solomon that mentions love in it, don't just think, oh, that's kind of neat, you know. We're talking about love. You know, there is a serious characteristic that is being brought out here that needs to be in our life. So if you look at chapter 1 and verse 2, love is better than wine. What we're supposed to learn from that is, love between a man and a woman is to be better than any material kind of thing around us. The strong love between a man and a woman is better than wine. Any material kind of thing, money or wine or anything else that might make you feel good, love is better than that. Look at this statement now in chapter 2. His banner over me is love. Ask yourself, well, what quality is that? So when you read a verse about love, ask yourself, what is the quality of the love that's being taught here? That's very important. Well, what is a banner? This is talking about a flag or a standard that's being raised. The tribes of Israel had different flags for the different tribes, or somebody going out to battle would raise up a flag. His banner over me is love. Love is going to identify our relationship. It's not going to be tied to money. It's not going to be tied to fame and fortune and anything like that. What is over us, what identifies who we are, is a good, strong, committed love. That is a great lesson for us even to this day. These things are not just for dating. It still needs to be in our relationship even to this day. What identifies who the two of you are? What identifies that? It needs to be a strong love for each other. Let's keep reading then. Verse 5. The Shulamite continues to talk. Stay ye me, hold me up with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am sick with love. Look at that. What's that? What's being taught there? You might remember when you first fell in love. You got sick. You got the butterflies in your stomach and all of that kind of thing. And you would stay up at night and you would worry about this and your stomach was in knots and you're on your way over there to see her or to see him and your stomach's in knots. You're in love and sick with love. What should that be? It should be something that stirs us, that's from the inside out, that affects our whole body, we might say, sick with love. That should be a characteristic in our life. These are very strong principles that are being lost today in our society. And if we're not careful, even in the Lord's church, we can have this wrong concept of not only dating, but also marriage. And it just sort of rocks along and then it just falls apart because we're not getting back to some of these principles on love that we're not studying. And like I said last Sunday night, Song of Solomon, the irony is we're avoiding this book, and yet this is the very book that teaches about principles that we need to have in our life, starting with dating and then starting with marriage. So, verse 6. Now, here's an embrace, a physical embrace. His left hand is under my head. His right hand does embrace me. So, during the dating years, there could be a physical embracing. But look at the very next verse. Look at the very next verse. We studied this last Sunday night. Don't stir up love until the proper time. So look at verse 6. There is a physical embracing. But then the very next statement is, don't stir up love. And so during the courtship years, yes, you can get close. It might even involve a kiss or two. Verse 2. It might even involve a kiss or two. But you are careful not to stir up love and make it more than it's supposed to be. And when we're talking about the physical intimacy, that is supposed to wait until marriage. And so there is closeness, verse 6, he's giving me a hug, but it doesn't go any more than that. It doesn't go any farther than that. And so we talked about this last Sunday night, verse 7, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose, or the gazelles, or by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up, nor wake love until it please. Look at verse 8. Here's the Shulamite speaking again. And look up here on the PowerPoint, starting in verse 8, now we have some activities that we're doing together during this dating or this courtship period. Here are some activities. The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. I was talking with a preacher about this recently, and he said, well, did you do that when you were dating Sherry? Were you leaping on the mountains and skipping upon the hills? I said, no, because there's no mountains or hills in Florida. So, no, I wouldn't do it. It's flat down there. I wasn't doing that. It's just talking about, you know, a man that's just, he's so in love that he can't wait to get next to her. My beloved is like a roe or a young hart. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He looks in at the windows. He glances through the lattice. My beloved spake and said unto me. So here's the guy that's always around, you know, looking for his girlfriend. And he can't wait to see her. He's always there because he's in love. Verse 10, my beloved spake and said unto me, now we have Solomon speaking in verse 10, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Here's some springtime activities of two people who are in love. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. It's a time when we're spending time together, we're expressing our love to each other, we're going to go out and do some activities together that are wholesome activities, not impure activities. It's getting to know each other and learning who we are, and are we going to be able to have a love where we can spend a lifetime together. So, the flowers are out, the birds are singing, the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree ripens her green figs, and the vines are in blossom. They give forth their fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, thou art in the clefts of the rocks, in the covert of the steep place. Let me see thy countenance. Let me hear thy voice. You might remember during that period of time, you just can't wait to hear their voice again. You know, you call them, and you just want to talk to them. And you remember that when you did that thing about, well, I need to hang up now. No, you hang up. No, you hang up. And you hang up, and then you call back again, and I just wanted to talk to you again. Well, I gotta go. Yeah, call back. You just want to hear their voice. You want to spend time with them. Isn't that the same thing that goes on today? I want you to notice that Song of Solomon is not some story that takes place on some weird planet somewhere, and it's something completely different from our world. It's the same world today. And this advice is being given to help navigate these kinds of things so that we can have a good relationship. It is not a book, in my judgment, that needs to be avoided. So, I just want to hear your voice, for sweet is thy voice and countenance is comely. And then, some people say that this is the Shulamite's brothers in verse 15, it could easily just be a continuation of Solomon and his remarks. But take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vineyards, for our vineyard are in blossom. Commentators will make a big deal about this verse, that they think that this is sort of a poetic way of saying, during the dating years, let's get rid of things that are going to damage our relationship. And so it's not like they're actually taking the foxes, but it's just metaphorical for, let's get rid of the things that are going to destroy our relationship. Lying, dishonesty, impurity, you know, not being straightforward, surmising, doubt, whatever. Let's get rid of those things. It could be that. It could just simply be a part of the activities that they're engaged in during the springtime. They're out doing different things together, and let's go chase the foxes that spoil our vineyards. I'm not adamant about that one way or the other. Verse 16, the Shulamite speaks, "My beloved is mine and I am his." Notice the exclusivity of this. This is a great principle. We're narrowing down the person that we want to spend the rest of our life with. He is mine, singular. I am his, singular. There's going to be this, we're moving toward an exclusive, singular relationship together that is bound by love. That is very, very important. Today, the world does the opposite. The world says, play the field, go out and be sexually active with anybody you want, and you may or may not settle down later. God says, no, it's the other way around. And you date and you talk with different ones to single that down to one person that we can spend our life with. Come with me now to chapter 3. During the dating period, there will be times, maybe, when we are uncertain about our relationship. We might get hot and heavy into that relationship, and we've been together for several months or a few years, and then maybe somebody gets cold feet. And somebody says, well, you know, I'm not really sure about this. I need to hold off on this. And you might wait a little bit, and then get back together again. There's going to be some things sometimes that might separate us or might give us pause. Is this the person I want to spend the rest of my life with? But we have to have a determination of love, a determination of love. So let's end this section tonight by reading the first 5 verses of chapter 3. Now, likely what this is a dream. This is the woman, this is the Shulamite woman having a dream. Some suggest it might be an actual thing where she actually gets up at night and she goes to the city looking for Solomon. I don't have a problem with that. But because of the context of it in verse 1, this is taking place on her bed and she's thinking about this, it's been described more likely as a dream. So chapter 3, verse 1, the Shulamite says, "By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loves." And if you're taking notes in your Bible, you're going to want to make a note that the phrase "my soul loves" is found in verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, and verse 4. You're going to want to note that. And I want you to notice it says "whom my soul loves." Here's another. Ask yourself, what is that characteristic of love? It's a love that comes from the deep down in the soul, and it comes out. It's not based upon just simply outward, physical, shallow, temporary kinds of things. It comes from the soul, and that's the kind that's going to be committed for a lifelong relationship. I want you to notice that, but in each verse. So, by night on my bed, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I found him not. I said, I will rise now and go about the city and the streets and the broad places. I will seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I found him not. Well, so she just gave up. I give up. No, she has determination until she finds him. And so this is the determination of love. This is a good thing. This is a proper thing. This is the right person that I can be with for the rest of my life. I'm not going to let some little something separate us. It might have been a little spat or argument. It might have been a little disagreement. It might have been a little misunderstanding. It might have been something bigger than little. It might have been something where I had to apologize for something. But I'm going to be determined to keep this together. And that's a great quality that is missing often in our world today. So I sought him, but found him not. The watchmen that go about the city, verse 3, found me. To whom I said, did you see whom my soul loves? It was but a little that I passed from them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house. Again, there's no suggestion here of any sexual contact. This expression, into my mother's house, is going to show up again later in chapter 8. After they're married, she says, I want to bring him into my mother's house even after they're married. It's not so much physical contact or sexual contact. I want to bring him to the place of comfort and consolation and care, a place that I grew up in, a place that I trust. It would be like saying today, I'm ready to bring him home to meet my mother. It'd be something like that, we would say today. So I'm going to bring him to my mother's place, a place of trust and confidence, and a place that we're used to being. There's no suggestion here of any sexual contact. Into the chamber of her that conceived me. That's parallel to the statement that was right above it. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up nor awaken my love until it please. And so in verse 1, there is a separation. In verses 2 and 3, there's a determination. I'm going to keep this together. In verse 4, there's a celebration. I'm happy that I've found him. But look at verse 5. This is very, very important. Just like back in chapter 6. In chapter 2 and verse 6, there's an embrace, but it doesn't go any farther than that. The very next verse, verse 7 says, don't stir up love. The same thing here. In fact, all three times in the book of Song of Solomon where you find this statement, do not stir up love, you'll notice right before it, the verse before it, was some verse talking about being close together. So, yeah, we're physically close together, but we're going to put a limit on it, and we're not going to let it be stirred up to something that it should not be. We're going to see that even later in chapter 8. Even when they are married, that principle is there. So that's something that we have to consider even to this day. Love always needs to be based upon proper biblical principles that God has for us. He made us. He knows the emotions we have, the physical things that we have, but it has to be based upon those things. Don't stir up something more than what should be there, and with someone it should not be, and at a time that it should not be. So, the determination of love, they keep those things together. Now, I'm going to skip over some of these lessons from chapter 1 and 2, and I'm going to try to get into and close this evening with some of these practical lessons then with regard to courtship and dating. Number one, look for someone that you can truly love. Be highly selective. Highly selective. Those of us who are married here this evening, we're not in this process, but we can help others. We can help our children and our grandchildren as they grow up. Look to these principles. Be highly selective. I would say look for someone who's a faithful New Testament Christian first, and then go from there. And if they need to be converted, have a Bible study with them. If they're not religious or they're in the wrong religion, study with them. My sister did that with my brother-in-law, and he serves as a faithful elder in the Lord's church. He was once a member of the Lutheran church, and she had a Bible study with him, and they studied for several weeks, and he was converted. So if the person you're interested in is not a Christian at all, or not a New Testament Christian, they're in a denomination, which is not New Testament Christianity, study with them, talk with them, convert them. What we find here in chapter 1 and 2 is someone that I'm narrowing down that I can be with and have a true love with. And be highly selective. And that statement, he is mine and I am his. we're boiling this down to someone that I can spend the rest of my life with. So use those years or weeks or months or years, however long that takes in the courtship process, to look for that one person that I can be with. God made marriage, Genesis 2. He wants us to love our wives and wives respect their husbands, Ephesians 5, Colossians 3:19. Wives are to love their husbands, Titus 2:4. We're looking for someone that we can do that with for the rest of our life. And so we need to be highly selective and be very careful in that process. Another thing that we learn from tonight's lesson is, look for someone with inward godly character. Look at verse 3. Your name is as oil poured forth. A character. Well, I like the way he looks or she looks. That's fine, but you got to get deeper and ask about their character. Are they honest? Are they a faithful Christian? Are they a hard worker? Do they save? Are they committed to the Lord? Are they going to attend all of the church services? See, today, those kinds of things are not being taught. It's kind of like, find someone that looks good, and if you like the same music on your phone, then go with it. Get married. You've got to get a lot deeper than that. Proverbs 31 speaks about a woman with deep character. 1 Timothy 2 and 1 Peter 3 talks about a woman with deep character, godly character, shamefastness and sobriety, and a woman whose heart is godly. We've got to look for those kinds of things. Well, Brother Rees, you know, there's not many of that going on. Well, take your time. Pray about it and take your time, but don't rush in based upon, well, we like the same music on our phone. We went out a couple of times. We like the same movies. You know, we like the same restaurants. You got to get deeper than that. So in chapter 1 and verse 3, we've just barely gotten into the book. It mentions a very, very important principle, and that is, it's not just about outward beauty. They do talk about each other and how they describe their physical features, but inwardly is this character, and she, verses 5 and 6, is a hard worker. You marry someone that's lazy, you're likely going to have a lazy spouse the rest of your life, and there's going to be many, many things that are not going to be getting done, that need to be getting done. Is this a hard-working person? Are they committed to the Lord? Are they honest? Are they genuine? Do they save, or do they just blow money? Are they a person who wants to rack up a bunch of debt or be fiscally conservative? Do they read their Bible? Are they active in the local church? Well, they attend. Sometimes they go. Well, a bench warmer may not be someone that you want to marry. A bench warmer can go from warm to cold. And so we've got to be careful about that. And during the years when you are looking at someone, you've got to look deeper than just outward looks. Here's another lesson that we learned from chapters 1 and 2. Look for someone with a good work ethic. I just mentioned that. In Proverbs 31, the woman is a hard worker in and out of the home. And if a man will not provide for his own, he's worse than an unbeliever. And ladies, you marry some lazy, no good boy. Well, what does he do all day? Well, he's on his phone all day. Well, okay, you can't pay the bills by just surfing your phone. Is he going to get a job? Is he going to get out and work? And if you don't provide for your own, you're worse than an infidel, an unbeliever. And we live in a generation where it just seems like more and more people are lazy. You've got to look for better qualities than, well, I really like the way he looks. Now, he's pretty lazy. He just sits around on the couch all day long. Well, pick somebody else. What do we learn from chapters 1 and 2? We learn to look for someone who's kind and considerate and appreciative. Look at the words that are being spoken to each of these individuals. How is the man speaking to the woman? How is the woman speaking to the man? As you go back through and read that language, they're considerate and kind and appreciative. And by the way, fellas and ladies, we don't drop that after we get married. Well, that's only for the dating part, that I have to be really nice. We have to work at that even now. We all have to work at that even now. So what we find in these words in chapter 1 and 2, they're plentiful, they're personal, they're positive, they're pure, they're uplifting, they're encouraging. And I've done another lesson before entitled Attitudes That Sweeten Marriage. And that's one of them. Speaking in such a way to our spouse that we find this kind of language in chapters 1 and 2. It's easy, just speaking for myself, you may have a different situation, but it's easy to lose sight of that after being married, and we've got to remember that. So in 1 Peter 3:7, Peter says that we dwell with our wives according to knowledge or understanding. And that would certainly include how we speak kindly and considerately and appreciative of them. In chapters 1 and 2, we also learn this very important lesson from chapter 2 and verse 7, and that is keep love within its proper bounds. Do not engage in physical intimacy or sexual intercourse until the proper time. Do not do it. Now, the world says do it. The world says go out and do it. Do it with a bunch of people if you want to. It's fornication. It'll keep you out of the kingdom of heaven. It's a sin. It's fornication. It'll keep you out of heaven. That's a serious thing. And in our scripture reading this evening, Christ wants us to, he uses the word vessel there, which is talking about our body. We're to take our vessel, our body, and use it in a sanctified way, separate from sin. We don't use our body to engage in sexual immorality. We don't do that. The world does that. We do not do that. And in chapter 2 and verse 6, they're giving each other a hug, but it stops right there. And so sexual intimacy is saved until the wedding day. And we're going to see that, Lord willing, next Sunday night when we get to the wedding day. But you keep it that way, and you don't engage in it before then. You have to exercise restraint. That's the whole point of verse 7. Love should not be stirred up. You've got to exercise restraint. In this case, it would include the sexual immorality. Later in chapter 8, they're already married. It still includes restraint and building a marriage on the right kind of love. But here the application would also include do not engage in sexual immorality prior to marriage. Well, all my friends are doing it. Well, they're doing sin. That's what they're doing. Well, when I watch all the TikTok and the Instagram and all of this kind of stuff, everybody's doing it. Well, they're doing sin. You don't do that. Well, he said he really likes the way I look. It doesn't change it. It's still sin. Don't engage in that kind of thing. And so during this dating and courtship, we keep love within its proper bounds. Spend time together in preparation for a lifelong companionship. In chapter 2, we find them going out, even in chapter 1, we find them doing things together. They're sitting and talking inside a room, at a table, they're outside, they're going different places. Use that time to talk about serious relationships that we're going to stay together for life. I find it interesting that the very first book of the Old Testament, in Genesis 2, that's where God ordains marriage. The very last book in the Old Testament, unfortunately, God had to rebuke his people for divorcing. And it's almost as if by the time of Malachi, people just didn't care about that divine institution, that sacred, divine, wonderful institution that we read all the way back in Genesis. By the time of Malachi, They were just divorcing at will, and God said, I hate divorce. And so, spend time together, and Jesus said in Matthew 19:6, what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. It's a lifelong relationship. So, listen, rather than spending a lot of time during the courtship and the dating years on just things like, let's go out and buy something and eat something and watch a movie and do stuff on our phone. There's nothing wrong with that. Spend more time talking about the serious things that we need to be talking about to stay together for life. That's what's going to matter in the long run. And then last of all, and we'll close, determine not to let anything stand in the way of our true love. That's what the point of chapter 3, 1 through 4 is about. When it looks like there's going to be a separation, be determined, I'm going to find this man. I'm going to find this woman. The Proverbs here, we won't read them. These Proverbs talk about how that a prudent wife is from the Lord. God wants us to have someone to help us make it to heaven. And when you find that person, work and be determined to make that a part of your life. Sometimes we let small things get in the way of something that could be a very big and beautiful thing. And be determined that we're going to base this relationship on love. Well, I hope that that first part of our book was helpful. You see, it's not that bad. Song of Solomon is not that bad. You don't have to run away from it. It's okay. And the next lesson hopefully will be the same. We'll get into the wedding day in our next lesson, Lord willing. Let's take these principles and do the best we can to apply them in our lives and help others have these things so that we can have that beautiful marriage relationship that God ordained all the way back in Genesis 2. There may be someone here this evening that needs to respond to the gospel. We want to encourage you to do that. If we can help you to be baptized into Christ, you might be thinking, maybe a young person might be thinking, well, how can I be that young person that we read about tonight? Well, the first step is be a Christian. So if we can help you to be a Christian, be baptized into Christ, let us help you to do that. That's the best way to start any relationship with somebody else, is to be a godly Christian. If you've fallen away in some way and we can help you come back to the Lord, why would you come as we stand and sing? If you have any needs, please come forward.